you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Steve Morse from Deep Purple, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Mark Striegel,
John Astronomy,
the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly, and now your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey, welcome to episode 665 of Talking Metal. This is John Astronomy coming to you from Jersey City, New Jersey.
Yo, and Mark Striegel here, the two founding members of Talking Metal back in the saddle here on episode 665, as John mentioned. You know, at one point, John, I thought 666 would be our last episode.
I think it will not be our last episode because it's coming up soon.
And I have to tell you, confidentially, not confidentially because everyone fucking hearing this, but I honestly, I don't know if it was earlier this year, probably at this point, late last year, I was actually thinking about it. I was like, you know, it's been such a good ride. Maybe 666 would be the episode
like
to actually
ending.
And ending. Stop it because... Nothing goes on forever, you know, and I thought about it for a couple weeks, actually, and there was a day or two that I was like, yep, that's it. It'll be the last episode, and then I bailed on it. I was like, fuck no.
right.
Yeah.
And, right. We want to keep Talking Metal alive.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, there's already people probably already know because we're going to be. I hope you're going to be with me, but I will definitely be at the.
Oh yeah, the Pod Fest.
Yeah, the Rock and Pod Fest, and the guests keep getting better and better. It's not just, you know, Rock and Roll Geek Show and Decibel Geek and Talking Metal and Talk Tomy podcast hanging out. We're getting like actual like rock stars like. Some of the guys from Cinderella, Eric, what's his name? Brittingham is going to be there now. Mark Slaughter is going to be hanging out. I think Max Norman, the great Ozzy and Megadeth producer, will be there.
Cool.
So it's going to be lots of people selling vinyl. It's going to be a great, great event. It's in Nashville, Tennessee. It's on August 26th. And we've sold one of our spots, our guest spots. And what I mean by that is there are three spots available, and you can actually host an episode of Talking Metal with us. We'll record it right there at the expo on August 26th in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a $75 donation to the GoFundMe page, which will be linked through today's show notes of episode 665 on talkingmetal.com. And that helps pay for the venue and stuff. Like that's not going into my pocket or John's pocket or anyone's pocket. That's just to help cover the costs of the entire thing. And we've sold one, and there's two more opened. And basically, you get to come on and chat with us for 30 minutes. You pick the topics, you pick the songs, ask John about Ace, ask me about whatever you want, and whatever you want to do, we can do on the podcast, and it's a $75 donation. And what you do is when you make that pledge to the GoFundMe page, just note that it's for a guest spot on the Talking Metal podcast. And the way you find this is you can go to talkingmetal.com, go to the Talking Metal section, and find our podcasts. And in that, you click on the episode 665, or really any episode, and you go down, and it'll have the links to the GoFundMe page. I was looking to see if I had the links up. I think I forgot to put the links in last week's episode. I need to revise it.
We'll add them.
Yeah. So the GoFundMe page is actually GoFundMe.com/RockNPodExpo. RockNPodExpo. It's going to be a great, great weekend. A lot of people coming in. Greg Renoff, who wrote the Van Halen book, he's been a guest here on the podcast, I think, like 4 times. He will be there. It's going to be a lot of rock and metal talk going on at the Rock and Pod Expo. John.
Yeah, I'm sorry I called it Podfest.
Yeah, Podfest, whatever.
Ozfest, Podfest.
Again, GoFundMe.com/RockandPodExpo.
Aren't we also going to be giving away some Ace stuff?
Yes, yes, thank you. For $40, and again, this is all done through the GoFundMe page that I just mentioned, you can get a copy of the book that John co-wrote with Ace, No Regrets, and you'll sign it, right, John? You'll sign it and personalize it to the people. And John also said he would throw in with that a 8x10 glossy signed by Ace himself, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. So that's
and some guitar picks too. I'll throw in some bonus picks, Ace picks.
Excellent, excellent.
Probably actually Kiss picks. Actually, probably Kiss Farewell Tour picks.
Oh, nice, nice.
What? But I got directly from my Ace's place.
Wow. Okay, you've given me some of those, right? They have the different cities on
cities. On yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those are
very
and the cool.
Farewell Tour. Yeah, he had a different pick for every city.
Wow.
And what's pretty neat is that there were a couple of like canceled or postponed shows or something on that tour, but the picks were still made. So those are like really rare if you happen to get one of those, because it's like a pick from a show that technically didn't exist. But these picks all directly came from Ace's studio.
Wow, very cool. So check that out. We'll have all the incentives up in the show notes on talkingmetal.com. And perfect. John, you want to tell the listeners who we have on today's show?
Yes, we have Steve Morse from Deep Purple, a great guitar player. This guy has a lot of history, not only with Deep Purple, but as a just one of the greatest guitar players. I remember up at Berkeley, and we were talking about this earlier. Like, he was one of the guys that all of our guitar player friends, really looked up to, and just has been known in the I call it like the musician world is just being like a world class top notch guitar player.
Yeah, I mean, can play rock, can play country, can play jazz, can play fusion. This guy does it all, and he is a master at it. I mean, what a great guitar player. And it was a true honor to speak with him. I've always been a massive fan of Deep Purple, and they are coming around on their, what appears to be, at least from the sounds of this interview, their final run of shows here in the U.S. So another of the all-time greats, it looks like will be hanging up their hat alongside Black Sabbath and Motley Crue and so many other bands. It's kind of it's kind of the end of the rock era. All these just classic great bands.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to go on that much longer. I mean, as we get into our mid to late 40s, at least that's where John and I are at this point in our lives. You know, these guys, some of these guys are 20, 25 years older than us. And it's going out in the road, as you know, John. It's
hard. It's hard for me. Yeah. It's hard for me, and it's hard for anyone. And let alone like, for example, if my you know, my dad's a guitar player, and he's the, you know, in the same age group a lot of these guys are in. And, you know, I think it'd be pretty rough to be, you know, for him to be getting up every day and flying, you know, all over the place and taking tour buses. I'm sure he could do it, but it would be tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I haven't played a gig in a little while. You've done gigs more often than I have in years of late, but you know, I would always give my all, but I would play a gig at the Continental, you know, a club in New York City's East Village. And, you know, I'd jump up and down for 45 minutes straight and play my heart out and sing my heart out. But the next day I would just be absolutely destroyed, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I know some of these older guys aren't jumping around like they used to. And of course I would go out and then drink until 4 a.m. after the gig, which I'm sure also added to that. But literally my muscles would be sore. And this is, this is when I was in my 20s and 30s. So, you know, I can't imagine just the beating that your body just takes.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you the truth. I was talking to Ace about this very same subject because, I've done like 3 gigs with Like It in the last couple of years. And the,
yeah, like I think it was either John's current band, guys. Great band, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think it was the second gig, the first or second gig. After the gig, I was just so wiped out. I went into the basement of the like house on this estate that we did a gig at, and I was just sitting there, and I was like literally wiped out. And what was it was kind of funny because a bunch of people came up and wanted to talk to me, and I don't think that they necessarily were like, oh my god, this Like It show was so great, we want to talk to like the guy who was playing the guitar. It was more like, I think the people wanted to talk to me because I wanted to, you know, some of them were just my good friends, but I think some people wanted to talk about Ace and this, that, and the other thing. And it was right. All cool. Everybody was great. But I was like sitting there going like, you know, I was out of breath, and I was just kind of thinking to myself, man, I wish everybody could just give me like 5 minutes to like catch my breath, and then I'll you know, perk back up, and I'd be happy to talk to everybody. So, and you know, it was no offense to anybody who wanted to talk to me, but I was like wiped out. I couldn't handle it. And I told Ace, I said, Ace, I said, you know, you're playing these gigs night after night, you know, you're doing like, you know, a 90 minute set, and you know, and then you do a meet and greet. And I was like, I don't know how you do it. I said, I did like a freaking 6 song set. I was ready to die like after it. And you know, and I'm 20 years younger than you. And he goes, John, he goes, I'm just a professional. I've been doing this for, you know, 40 some years. He goes, I don't know what to tell you other than, you know, I am just used to this. And I guess it really is true. Like, you know, he just is so used to doing this kind of stuff that it doesn't, you know, I guess it's like an athlete. Like, you know, you gotta, you know, train, and you know, the more you do it, the easier it gets. Whereas I hadn't played that many gigs, and I play 6 songs and I'm ready to freaking, you know, kill over. So although, you know what's so funny, the last Like a gig was on New Year's Eve, and I did not have any drinks that whole night. And I'll tell you the truth, I felt great after the gig. It was like that's kind of a rare thing to not have any drinks on the day of a gig, but you know, for at least me and you.
Yeah,
on New Year's Eve, yeah, and
good for you.
I'll tell you, yeah, it was amazing. But I think, believe it or not, I played better that night than I ever played before. And I don't know if it was a no drinking thing or whatever it was, but I don't even know if I'll be able to top that. Like, I think that might have been my, you know, best and last best gig. Even if I play again, I don't know. I think that if you didn't see that gig, it's all going down from here.
Well, I doubt
I'm
that.
Kidding. I'm just, thanks.
Speaking of a great gig, this is from a Deep Purple concert back in 1999. This is with Steve on guitar. Deep Purple classic. This is Fireball live.
Trying to understand you, trying to love you right, to be a
That was Fireball, the live version.
Yes, from 1999. That's on Spotify and iTunes. You can buy it. Oh, man, the great John Lord on the keys on that. What a loss, man. I know, you know, it's just... Oh, man, what just such a classic sound that guy had. And that song definitely really highlights how great John Lord was. And I am so excited for you guys to hear this really good interview with Steve, the current guitar player of Deep Purple, former guitar player of Dixie Dregs and Kansas. And this guy, his resume just goes on and on and on. You want to do this? You want to get into it, John?
Yeah, why don't we get into the interview, and then we'll hear a little bit more from Steve, and then me and you will come back and wrap it up.
Right on. This is Time for Bedlam. Brand new Deep Purple on Talking Metal, followed by my interview with Steve Morse from Deep Purple. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and on the line, legendary guitar player,
former guitarist of Kansas, and of course the Dixie Dregs, current guitar player of Deep Purple, Steve Morris. How are you, Steve?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm excellent, and I've been a longtime fan of Deep Purple, and I got to tell you, I am absolutely digging the new record, the 20th Deep Purple record, Infinite. Sounds like a classic Deep Purple record to me. So right out of the box, when you guys go into the studio to do a Deep Purple record, how much of the Deep Purple iconic sound and brand do you have to think about when making a record? Is there a conscious effort to be like, we got to make this sound like a Deep Purple record, or does it just naturally come together like that?
Well, I think the band can go in lots of different directions, and there's always a shred of direction before we do an album project. And in fact, one of the things we all agreed on was we were going to try to keep this kind of riffy, simple feel, but with some surprises. In other words, it's okay, Morris, to come up with some weird stuff, but you know, the majority of what we need is good rock and roll feel.
Right.
So that's my way of doing that is to, you know, sort of introduce the ideas that I think would work and do that in great quantity.
Right.
Because,
okay.
You know, it's like it's trying to sell, a pair of shoes to somebody that's really picky. You know, what are the odds you're going to bring in two pairs of shoes and they're going to love them both? It's just not going to happen. So you need to keep bringing in ideas. And then that way the collective soul of the band picks what they want to work on.
Okay.
And one of the best ways we do that is just by jamming.
Right.
You know, everybody, you know, will sort of, everybody sees the jam as being, you know, natural and non-directed, but you know, sometimes I do sort of try to push things on the band during a jam and see if it catches hold. And oftentimes that's the best way to get something. You know, if everybody sort of latches onto it and really likes it, then you know it's going to work.
So you described it as, I think, selling a pair of shoes to somebody who's really picky. Who's really picky? Is it certain members of Deep Purple more than others?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, let me take that back. Let me just say they're all really picky.
And that's not
and
a bad
Bob
thing.
Ezrin is more. No, it's not a bad thing at all. It's even harder to get something that Bob Ezrin likes,
right,
too. So, you know, there's a little bit of attrition that, you know, like that happens sometimes too quickly. And in which case I'll go back and, you know, give it a little time to come back with a slightly different thing and say, look, this, I know I floated this idea before, but I really think this is going to work.
Right.
And it's, you know, if you can make a little demo of it, it's even better because everybody can sort of see what you're talking about.
Right. Now.
Like the middle part of the surprising was something like that. It was me just, I demoed it up, sort of mocked it up, the instrumental version, you know, the instrumental part that was in lieu of a guitar solo.
Okay.
Because, you know, I just found that work with Bob, that if I do my normal, you know, stylistic, little shreddy bit, little melodic bit, back and forth, or whatever feels natural to me, that he would generally, you know, just not like it.
Hmm.
That he wanted me to do more melodic or you know, I guess classic rock sounding stuff.
You know, you mentioned the song.
And that's always been the case though with him.
Yeah, the surprising, great, great song, by the way. But to me, there's a real mood to that song, almost a dark mood, if you will. And there's a lot of the songs that are like that. They're not just your typical standard songs. They kind of take you someplace, take you on a journey. Is that Ezrin's influence?
Yeah, he's a big fan of, if you're going to be moody, then, you know, really take me somewhere. Like, he let it develop. Don't rush it. Give me some of that mood and give me lots of descriptive colors. And he, you know, I mean, you could just see his influence,
right,
of how he must have interacted with the guys in Pink Floyd, you know, when they did the classic albums that they worked with Bob on.
Absolutely.
He really loves to encourage the band to take it out sometimes.
Right. Another song I love off the record, Birds of Prey, again, just kind of this journey moving to different places. And I just wanted to ask you if you had any memories of that song coming together.
Yes. I remember when we were all in the room in Nashville, and we'd had this idea and been kicking around, and he had he sort of hadn't been feeling it, but he just sang a little bit of something, and you know, Bob has like Superman hearing, and he can, you know, he can hear while somebody's talking to him on the phone and somebody else is having a conversation, if somebody does something in a far corner of the room, he's like, what was that? Play that again. What was that? He sort of did that, and he was like urging Ian on, and Ian was like, yeah, that's I can feel that. Yeah, that would be good. And I watched it go from a tune that may not make it to one of our favorites, because yeah. You know, because I guess just, you know, that the perfect thing a producer could do is take the tiniest shred of even a doubtful little attempt at something that no one's paying attention to, and to say, yes, go with that. Give me more of that.
Right, right on. And
that was a memorable part of that song for me.
Yeah, you know what? You know what's it's a small part of the song, but I just wanted to ask you, there about 3 minutes in, you hear this thing that's reminds me of like the Hendrix backwards guitar that he used to do, where he'd flip the tape over. I mean, it sounds like a backwards guitar. Do you know the part I'm talking about?
Yeah, it now, is.
How do you do that? Like nowadays, where bands, I'm assuming you guys probably weren't recording on tape. Is that do you have a guitar pedal that does that, or how do you actually get that backwards guitar sound in 2017?
Well, I did it almost exactly the way I used to do it with tape, which is, you know, write out the chords frontwards and then write them out backwards and then play over that, but with an offset. Like when I do it with tape, I would have to think, you know, start the solo beat late, and, you know, do a click track once the tape is flipped over that starts a beat late. Because it takes a while for the backwards notes to develop when they're,
right,
you know, after you're doing it. And so I did that and just, you know, flipped it over digitally.
Okay.
And I, that was something I mocked up at using my laptop and sort of had to sell Bob and everybody on. Because, you know, they were like, backwards, no. I think for the mood, it could be cool.
Yeah, no, it works really well. It's great. It's great. One Night in Vegas, another song that I'm really enjoying off the record that just has this just amazing groove to it. Was that something that came about again through just jamming? You guys all getting together and jamming in a room?
Yeah, One Night in Vegas is a perfect example. I think we were in Portugal when we were, you know, Ian Gillan lived a lot of his time in Portugal, and he has friends there from other English bands, and in fact it was bass player from Iron Maiden. His place is where we were recording.
The bassist of Iron Maiden?
Yes, he had a studio enterprise there, and it wasn't quite finished, so we got to just, you know, use it for our writing session. And I remember being in Portugal as we were kind of jamming that tune, you know, before it became a song.
Right.
And it's just feel, you know, Don's got all amazing chops and dexterity, but sometimes he just loved to just sit down and come up with the groove.
Sure.
On the organ, and of course, that's Pacey's trademark.
Yeah. Great stuff. You know, the lyrics of that song are also just a great story. Is there any, do you know anything about where those lyrics come from? Is there any truth to that story?
Everything he writes, and this is my theory, is that there's autobiographical elements to it. But he also likes to write. I've seen him make up characters that were amalgamations of, you know, people he'd known that were just amazing or preposterous to him, and he would roll that into a person and sometimes give him a name.
Right.
And one of the songs he was describing doing that to me. In a song called Ted the Mechanic on our first album together. But yeah, I believe he writes a lot from experiences, observations, and he loves to do ironic stuff. Like he'll take a phrase that might mean something in a, a Welsh dialect or something and incorporate that as a second meaning. He's an expert, an absolute expert at those cryptic crossword puzzles. Yeah. Because of that, because they're all about you come up to one thing and then what does that mean? What's the alternate meaning in that? It's a real clue.
Absolutely. Cool. And you mentioned Ezrin, and this is your second record with him, right?
My third, but your third. The band's second.
What was
Kansas.
You did a Kansas record with him. Are you the guy who initially brought Ezrin to Deep Purple?
Well, I was an enthusiastic supporter.
Yeah.
And it took Bob being interested. And these kind of things really happen when the record company has an interest in it.
Right.
Or the manager. I don't think the band really thought that they needed a producer. I'm sure we can always put together an album without a producer. But I like the challenge, and I like the fact that he pushes everybody. He was not just hard on me. He was hard on everybody, giving them challenges all along the way.
Right on.
And I think you just get more for your time, when you have somebody as smart as he is, and he has got incredible, computer-like memory.
Cool.
So he'll remember, yesterday. No, more smart. That thing you did yesterday, that it was after the second bar, and he'll sing the part.
Wow.
And yes, just incredible musical recall. So I could see his thumbprint on everything he's done. After working with him, you see how involved he is. You could say, wow, he could make anybody sound better.
Right. Cool. Now, It's interesting when you look at the long career that Deep Purple has had. I mean, at this point, we got to be going on like 48, 49 years of this band. And an amazing thing, I never really thought of, but you've been in that band. I mean, there's been numerous different guitar players, but you've been in that band really at this point a lot longer than any other guitar player has ever been in Deep Purple. And having said that, when you look back at the, I guess it's been 23, 24 years of your time with Deep Purple, what have been some of the big highlights for you?
Wow. There's a lot of highlights. I guess the first gig.
Really?
And really the first time meeting everybody was just a few hours before the first gig. But we got to jam and just let loose. And I thought it was so cool. The guys trusted me to know the material. And our get-together was really about jamming and seeing if we enjoyed playing together. And I played something, and John Lord just spat it right back to me with the kind of ears that you don't normally hear in a rock musician, more late in a very good jazz musician. And Ian Pace was swinging the feel. I thought, this is so cool. And Roger's just, he's the all-around eclectic, knows every style, loves every style of music. Guy who, he actually loves to create a simple, solid feel. And he does it, you know, just better than anybody. And then Ian Gillan, like, urging me on to go, you know, take it out, Steve, go. I love it. And it was, that was a big memory for me, just the first time meeting him and then doing the show. And during the show, I screwed up coming out of a section because, you know, I'd been listening to a couple tapes of a live gig, and I didn't know where the cues were. I just remembered they came out after a certain amount of bars. So I still, you know, I went into the next part. And I guess I forgot a section or something because Ian Pace cracks the snare and brings it way down, keeps the beat going and simmering. Roger's just kind of percolating underneath it. And Ian Gillan sort of is speaking over the microphone. All right, Stevie, that was really good. What do you say? Let's try something like this. And then he starts to sing the next part that I'm supposed to be playing. Wow. It was awesome. It was the most awesome thing to me. I mean, of course, I was embarrassed that I, you know, had missed the entrance. But, you know, the rest of the gig had gone well and everything was fine because, you know, he made it that way. It wasn't like not a big deal. It was like it was funny. You know, he was sort of joking with me and saying, "Wait, that was really good, but why don't we try it this way?" and over the microphone for the whole audience, and everybody's just like, they're like, "Hey, this is cool. They're hanging out with each other. They're talking, man. They're having a good time."
Wow.
That was another. That's all part of the first day. But you know, when we play these gargantuan places where you know it's a sea of people and all the way to the horizon, that's cool and everything, but it's unreal. Yeah. You know, you're there because you have a brand name and it's a festival with lots of brand names and it's just an event and happening. But I think one of the coolest things was playing in La Paz, Bolivia at 13,400 feet elevation and just seeing the guys, you know, just gasping for air. I remember, if you look at Pacey's back, he's got a huge scar almost from stem to stern where, you know, he had operation, doesn't have all of his lung.
Right.
And somehow he was playing and survived with very little oxygen. And David Gillan just screaming these long notes and everything. I was really proud of the guys then. That gig, for some reason, really sticks in my mind as one of the strangest things. And another one was in India, first time we played there. And the only way you could play there is if you couldn't play for money. You had to play for a charity or something. And we were playing a charity for the Children's Hospital. But it was like $2 to get in. And it was just the biggest sea of people. And they started pushing up against the stage and the, like this army of security guys was, you know, pushing them back and there was nowhere they could go. But instead of rioting, they were just kind of like went into this mode of, I don't know what it was, but they just somehow dealt with it instead of, you know, rioting and killing all the security guys. They were putting them in an impossible situation. And another time in Chile, when they oversold the stadium and people were climbing on the light platforms and towers above the sound man out in the audience.
Wow.
And there was about 70 or 80 people on it. As soon as we started playing, they started shaking back and forth, rocking out, and it and fell over into the crowd. I mean, dozens of people went to the hospital, but it was at night. And when it fell over, it severed and shorted the cable. So there was no light all of a sudden. Of course, no power.
Right.
And we were just kind of, what do we do? And we stayed there and to, you know, just trying to figure out what happened. They took people to the hospital and said, everybody's going to be all right. Let's go on. And so they straight wired the sound to the side mixer, you know, to the monitor mixer on the side, right. Straight wired the lights all on, and we played the show. And later found out that was on one of those little male, you know, sold on TV compilations of disasters.
Oh, wow.
It was called Censored from TV.
Right.
Or something like that. And it was, you know, what happens when a rock band plays two rock? Right. Or something. And they didn't even identify which band it was. It was just,
right.
They just showed the audience, you know,
crazy.
The mayhem, you know.
Crazy stuff. Well,
but there's been a lot of good stuff. Like playing outside in the snow during a blizzard, playing in a typhoon with the rainwater shorting out our instruments until we had no more instruments left. We wow. played all the guitars and everything until everything was shorted out because they had been sitting out in that rain for hours.
Wow. Crazy stuff. Great stuff. Thanks for sharing that. You know, I know we're here to talk about Deep Purple today, but real quick, do you ever plan on doing another solo record?
I don't think the world's waiting on anything. Like, you know, it's just got to be the right time. And, you know, it's just very personal stuff. Like somebody, you know, doing paintings when they're relaxing and hope somebody will appreciate it someday. But I've got lots of ideas. I got lots of ideas going, and the, you know, Flying Colors project is taking some of the ideas, but I've got a lot left. So I'm definitely saving up for either Steve Morse or Dixie Dregs project.
Cool. I know we're running out of time here, but just a couple more questions.
Sure.
When you were a teenager, who were some of your favorite guitar players?
Oh, all the usual suspects, you know, Clapton, Hendrix, Beck, Page, Jim McCarty. Let me see, Steve Howe, Johnny Winter.
Right.
We just, and then, you know, later as I got in my late teens, John McLaughlin, and, you know, started taking it more out.
Right, sure.
With my vision and such stuff. But I enjoyed, you know, and, you know, very early from the Beatles, and just the sound of the guitar was amazing to me. And I think, you know, Chuck Berry, the Beatles, Stones, the Kinks, Yardbirds, every one of their songs had guitar in it, and the guitar was driving it. So rhythm guitar was really the biggest thing. And then
really?
Once you start that, you know, you really want to play solos and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think Chuck Berry was the first influence for me, you know, playing a solo. That was the first solo I ever learned was Johnny B. Goode.
Wow. Well, now, you know, Chuck Berry, do you, you know, there were other guitar players, there were, you know, Muddy Waters and, of course, going way back, Robert Johnson and guys like that. But in a way, do you feel that Chuck Berry is the first guy to bring electric blues to the masses? Is that a fair statement?
I wouldn't call it blues. I call it
rock and roll.
Yeah, I think that the actual rock and roll, you know, like the twist, the sort of like the swinging mixed with straight feel, and I think he sort of personified it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, you know, Deep Purple is heading out on the road with Alice Cooper and Edgar Winter in the States, and I think there's a date in Canada too, August 12th to September 2nd. We want to make sure all the listeners get to see you guys. I will be there on August 28th in New Jersey when you come through to the PNC Arts Center. And, you know, I know you're younger than the other guys in the band, but I don't really think anyone would call anyone in the band a young man anymore. So, you know, I guess my question is how much longer can Deep Purple go on? Do you see an ending to it? Has there been any talk about retirement?
Yeah, this is, as far as I know, this is our last big tour.
This is it.
And we've still got the Southern Hemisphere and maybe the Far East, some sections that haven't been done, but in 2017. But the guys want to go until they drop dead, but I think it'd be great to finish this tour, and even if we're not doing tours again, at least get together for some recording, or maybe a special get together, play at some benefit or something.
Right.
But yes, I think at some point it's appropriate, and I'd love to see the band go out on a high, like it is now.
Absolutely. The new record is just great. Classic Deep Purple. Are you guys billing it as the final tour, or is that just something you've spoken about among yourselves?
Well, the guys they don't want to face it, but they know it is.
Right. Okay.
And they've gone so far as to call it the long goodbye tour.
Okay.
That was actually the manager that did that, and the guys are a little poo-pooing that, because they don't want to commercialize it. Everyone gets old, everybody has a last tour, but there's a little bit of resistance from the band to commercialize it. But I don't see the problem with letting people know that, hey, it's your last chance.
Yeah. Yep.
I could be wrong. And there have been bands that have retired and then come out of retirement.
Yeah, lots of them.
But we have a lot of guys that are going to be in their 70s.
Right.
Or that are in their 70s. So I don't know how likely all that is.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Alice Cooper, Edgar Winter, Deep Purple, starting August 12th in the States. Can't wait. The new record is out now, and it is great. The 20th studio album by Deep Purple, Infinite. Steve, great job on this record.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate you doing this for us.
Well, I appreciate you speaking with us.
Thank you.
Have a great evening.
Appreciate you doing it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The night I fell apart, I begged her lover not to go away, but she went and broke my heart. I found myself in a Vegas bar with a whole new set of friends. I seen through the bottom of an empty glass light, looking through a fisheye lens.
That was One Night in Vegas, some brand new Deep Purple, available on iTunes.
Yeah, the new album is great. Bob Ezrin, can't go wrong with Bob Ezrin. I mean, so many
correct.
Of the, my favorite records of all time, The Wall, Kiss Destroyer, Revenge, of course. Yeah,
The Elder.
That, The Elder, yeah, all that classic Alice Cooper stuff. I mean, Peter Gabriel, I mean, oh, it goes on and on and on. He's such a talent. He's done even this band Coolish Shaker. I don't know if you remember them. They were kind
yeah,
of like
yeah,
this
I do remember them.
Psychedelic
yeah.
version of Oasis, kind of like back in the, I gotta say, early to mid '90s. And
yep.
I used to love those guys. They were great. And, and of course, Bob Ezrin did it.
That's very cool. Yeah, I got to meet him once or twice. Not even sure how, but I know. Isn't Derek good friends with him?
Yeah,
friend
no,
Derek?
I
our
had,
friend
I
Derek.
Had lunch. Yeah, I had lunch with Bob Ezrin. Believe it or not, with Derek wow. in Las Vegas in 2000, the year 2000. I was out there working for Derek Sivers, a friend of mine and John's, who ran a company called CD Baby, and then he sold CD Baby for just a buttload of money. but when he was doing CD Baby, I would occasionally do some work for him, and was actually one of the first CD to ever be released by CD Baby was my CD. Captain T was the band or the artist, and it was called U.S. Aliens. John, you did some songwriting on that record.
And I got a great story, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but can I tell them about the Tang?
Sure.
Yeah, I have some Tang actually in my cupboard right now. But there's a alien planet on the cover of this, and you know, it looks like it's in the desert. And in reality, Derek made that out of Tang.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, I forgot that. That's right. Yeah, absolutely, Tang, and that's the drink that astronauts first took into outer space back in the day.
There's a tie-in. It looks like a orange planet. And astronauts actually drank Tang.
Guys, this is old school. This is technically the Scorpions, but in my mind, it is Michael Schenker. This is one of the greatest instrumental songs of all time, at least to me, it is. This is Coast to Coast. Check it out here on Talking Metal. That was Coast to Coast off the Love Drive record by The Scorpions. But in a way, that song to me just reeks of Michael Schenker, and that's because he wrote it along with Rudolph. It's a co-write between the two of them. And his playing, I mean, you just cannot deny the signature sound of Michael Schenker, one of the greatest guitar players of our time, I think. And, you know, it's all about, like a guy like Jeff Beck, like Michael does not have to rip a bunch of licks playing super fast. He just has such a unique style. There's something about that, the way his fingers touch that fretboard and the tone he gets, not just from the effects, but really just from his personality bleeding through, that just is always so recognizable. Like that song right there, Coast to Coast, Michael Schenker and the Scorpions off the Love Drive record. Good stuff. So yep. Scorpions touring with Megadeth, John, I don't know if you heard that.
You know what? I think I did hear it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Two bands, yeah. I love. I'd love to check that out.
Yeah, definitely. I love both groups. Remember when we interviewed Herman Rarebell at a hotel in Manhattan?
Yes. Yeah.
He gave us some drumsticks. He was really a great guy. He was such a cool guy.
Yeah, former Scorpions drummer, Herman Rarebell. I have his solo record somewhere that Don Dokken does some singing on.
Cool.
And on that note, what's up with Ace? He doing any touring, any shows coming up?
Yeah, so we just announced on Tuesday, and I believe it was, that might even already been Wednesday at midnight or something in Australia, but Ace Frehley is joining Alice Cooper on Alice's Spend the Night with Alice Cooper 40th Anniversary Tour of Australia and New Zealand. So definitely go to acefrehley.com. You can find out all the details.
Amazing,
That's cool.
Never been there, but the pictures I see. And to circle back to the guy we were talking about earlier, Derek Sivers, the founder of CD Baby, he lives in New Zealand now.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
He's got a kid, a single dad. He's living over there in New Zealand. So.
Wow. When did he move there?
He moved there, probably like 6 years ago, maybe.
Wow.
I'm guessing. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
5 years ago, I'm not sure.
Good for him. Yeah. Good for him. That's great. So, and let me mention one other thing. So, right now, if you go to acefrehley.com, you can go to the tour dates section and you could see a list of the shows. There are several shows in Australia and then two shows at the moment in New Zealand. And there's another date listed up there. It's August 19th, 2017. Ace will be at Psycho Fest at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. Now, this is not like one of Ace's, like, you know, autograph signing things. Like, that's like a 3-day thing. This is an actual like rock festival, like where bands are playing concerts.
Who else is playing, you know?
So, King Diamond is one of the headliners. Yeah, and Ace. And I think that band, Brian Jonestown Massacre, I think, is playing, and a bunch of, there's like a zillion bands. Like I'm not even kidding. There's a lot of bands.
You going out for that?
Yeah, yeah, I'm gonna go out for that, and so definitely check that out as well, Mark. Hey, maybe you should come out for that.
It'd be a cool thing.
It's actually the week right before the Rockin' Pod Expo. It's like the weekend before
that.
It
might be a little difficult
then. Yeah, that's what I was a little nervous because I was like, oh God, you know, I hope that's not the same day as the Rockin' Pod Expo, but it's not. It's the previous weekend, so it looks like I will be, you know, having two busy weekends.
Right on.
Doing that.
And you're going to, it sounds like, I'm just finding this out today, but it sounds like you are confirmed to join Emily and myself down at M3 to participate in all the Talking Metal interviews and stuff we're going to be
doing there
just next weekend. So
coming
soon, this weekend, actually, because we'll post this on Tuesday. So it's this coming weekend. We're all going to be heading down there and all doing interviews and hanging out and enjoying a great weekend of some classic hard rock and heavy metal.
Yeah, it's going to be great. A lot of great bands, Kicks, Faster Pussycat, Dangerous Toys, Winger, Rat, Cinderella's, Tom Kiefer, Dokken, Warrant, Jack Russell's Great White, Vixen, Loudness not playing.
No Loudness.
Yeah.
So a lot of other great bands, though. Definitely still worth coming to see. Yep. Lita Ford is going to do a special acoustic set. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, it'll definitely.
It'll be a real fun weekend. And if I'm not going to stay for Sunday. I don't know if you're staying, John, but
Sunday should be
interesting. It's like a rock country day, like Charlie Daniels and Molly Hatchet.
Yeah, I would love to stay for that, but I got to get back to New York. But,
right.
Unless, you know, who knows, things could change. But at the moment, unfortunately, I will miss Sunday. But, it's going to be great. You know, here's the deal. I know this is currently in the news. What's up with Loudness not being allowed to, gain entry into the country?
There's, a lot of debate and discussion and stuff going on about it. But it appears that they're claiming... This came out today on Brave Words. They spoke to a Japanese newspaper. They're claiming that because of stricter immigration laws that they were denied entry. So there was some debate online saying, well, back in 2014, they were denied entry too. That's actually false. They clarified that today in the article. They said they canceled that for personal reasons in 2014. They did play an East Coast tour in 2011. They played, I think it was more a West Coast tour in 2015. And then they were also in the country in 2016 to board the Monsters of Rock cruise.
Right.
So they've been in the country, the last 2 years, 2015 and 2016, and they are claiming that because of stricter immigration policies, they were not permitted into the country. Now, that still leaves some questions, like as to, was there an arrest record in the past? Was there something, there must have been something.
They filled out their paperwork wrong. Yeah.
It could be as simple as that. They filled out their paperwork wrong. Somebody's passport wasn't up to date. There was something that was flagged. And that could be, that could have existed when they were here last year and the year before, and it wasn't it wasn't flagged at that point, but we don't really know, to be honest, John. We just know that for whatever reason, they were not allowed access into the country. And I'm curious, I'd like to hear more about it and hear why they weren't allowed access.
Yeah, definitely. But a great band. I've always been a fan of them.
Oh, yeah. So good.
You know who I really like? The band Vane.
They will be at M3, so that's going to be another one too.
I'm trying to think if I saw Vane at the Limelight or if I saw Davey Vane and Steven Adler play at the Limelight. Because didn't they have a band together? Davey Vane and Steven Adler?
They may have. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm really looking forward to that. And hey, by the way, I don't know if you heard, and it's kind of a sad thing. Here's a positive thing that the band Autograph is playing, but the drummer from all the classic Autograph records has passed away.
Yeah, I did hear that, and that is sad. I know the current version of Autograph, I think it's two original members. I should probably research that before we go down and end up interviewing them or something, but I know Steve Lynch is still there.
Yeah, but he was great. My friends always loved Steve Lynch as a
great
guitar
player. Yeah, great player.
Yeah, the drummer who passed away, his name was Kenny Richards, and he was the guy that put an X as his autograph and that video of what's that main song they have?
Turn Up the Radio.
Turn Up the Radio. Yeah, he went to sign this thing and it was an X, and then it said not computing or something on his headband. And and then Steve Plunkett was like the singer back then, and he's
not in it anymore,
right? He's not in it. The thing with Steve Plunkett is that he has a great career in like writing music for TV or movies or something like that.
Scores films and TV shows. Yes.
Yeah. And but Randy Rand is, I believe he's the bassist, and he is in the band as well now. So
two of the classic members, if you will, are still there. So I'm excited to see them and all the bands you mentioned. It's going to be a great weekend, and really, I mean, you had hinted that you might be coming down, but literally, I think I right before we started recording this podcast, John kind of confirmed to me that he's coming down.
Yes.
So I am excited for that. We'll be hanging with Emily and our friend Ian, and hopefully a lot of interviews and stuff taking place. I did want to mention just a couple little things before we get out of here, John. The Amazon links. Guys, you've always been good using those. I haven't hyped them for a number of episodes, but remember, they're there. I know all you guys make purchases on Amazon, so just go to Talking Metal first and use our Amazon links to click over. Then just go about your business as usual. No additional charge, no additional markup, just an additional step, and that helps us out. We have a PayPal tab. You can give us a PayPal donation if you choose. And you can definitely come and join us August 26th in Nashville and co-host an episode, as I mentioned earlier in the show. It would be great to see you guys out in Nashville. And if you're down at M3, definitely track us down. Say hello. I think that's about it. You know, look for John on the road with Ace. Right, John?
Yeah. I'm unfortunately not going to be going on the tour to Australia because, you know, I have my gig in New York, and sometimes going out of the country is not possible just due to how long the trip would be. And I have, you know, my full-time gig in the television industry, so I can't do that. But the U.S. dates, I'll definitely be on and heading out to Vegas, and you know, who knows what else will be happening in 2017. So it's gonna be good.
Cool. Connect with John on Twitter. We'll have him linked through today's show notes.
Yep.
I'm on Twitter and Facebook and all that. And yeah, please check out the show notes in the Talking Metal section on talkingmetal.com.
Oh,
we also have a news section, on this day section. There's a lot of activity on the site. So definitely visit talkingmetal.com. What's
so
that, John?
Check this out. I had one more thing. I posted some pictures on my Facebook page today of some of my gear. I put like Addicted to Gear. And I got two new heads. So like these Randall stacks now have two heads on top, but one of them is, and here's the crazy thing, they're the exact same outside as the Paul Stanley Colossus heads. Now here's the funny thing. One of them is just an empty head that the amp is not in there. And I don't even know. I found this on eBay and it's killer. Like I could just go get, you know, like a different Randall head, you know, the guts of it and put it in this, you know, outside like
right.
the case. And but it looks great. And then I cannot believe this, but I found a Randall RG100 classic head. Now, Dimebag fans may know that I believe the RG100 was one of his favorite ever heads, and this particular head has again the same exact, like, you know, case, you know, or, you know, like the whatever black Tolex they call that, as the Paul Stanley Colossus head. So basically, I've got like two stacks, each with two heads on the top. One of them is empty. You know, I like, you know, a lot of bands have like dummy equipment and stuff like that. I want to tell you one thing, Ace Frehley, like all those Marshalls are real. Like when you go see Ace and he has like four stacks, then he has like three cabs, like, you know, in front of the drum riser. Like we don't have any fake stuff. Like we got, you know who was our still is our Marshall rep is Nick Bocott from Grim Reaper.
Oh, nice.
And we got a bunch of 1960 A and B cabs. Some of them are, you know, the I think they call it like AC or BC. They have like upper grade Celestion speakers. They all have Celestion speakers, but there are some that have some even better speakers in them. And we've got a lot of DSL 100 watt heads, and Ace has some other heads as well. So all, you know, some of these bands, like you see these photos like where they have like these fake amps on stage, like the Ace stuff, none of
all
it
real.
Is fake. It's all
well,
real.
Cool. That's interesting to know for sure. John, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on this episode. I will see you at M3 for sure.
Correct.
We will hang. We'll do some interviews. We'll do some partying. It'll be a great weekend. We'll enjoy some great music. We hope to see you guys there too. We are going to end here with a cover. This is a Rush cover, Red Barjetta Barchetta? How do you say it, John?
I don't know. I always said it Red Barchetta, but Barchetta. I could be wrong. Who knows?
That's how it's spelled, actually. And this is Steve Morris on guitar, and you got James from Dream Theater on vocals, kind of an all-star lineup going on here. It's great. This is a great, great cover of the Rush classic here on Talking Metal, featuring our guest. Big thanks to Steve for coming on the show, and thanks to Karen, the publicist, who actually lives literally five houses away from me here in Maplewood. She set that up right around the corner. Yeah, so longtime friend of mine. Karen, thanks for setting this up on today's show. And everyone, go buy the new Deep Purple album. It's out now. It's great stuff. Produced by Bob Ezrin, classic Deep Purple, Ian Gillan, Roger Glover, Ian Paice. Who's on keyboards? Don Ari on keyboards, who did all that classic Aussie stuff, Mr. Crowley and all that stuff.
I have to throw in a real quick sidebar. People sometimes ask me, like, what was, you know, some of your favorite interviews? And I have to say that, you know, we did a lot of in-person interviews. We did a lot of phone interviews. And one of my all-time favorite phone interviews was Ian Gillan interview. That was just a great interview. And that was the funny thing. We all three of us were in New York, but we were all in three different places.
I was in L.A., actually.
Oh, you were in L.A.?
Yeah, I was in Santa Monica. I remember it. You dialed me in. But, yeah, I did that interview from the Los Angeles area.
Okay, that's right.
And you dialed me into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm almost positive we'd have to go back and
look. Yeah, no, I believe you're right. But I know that even though Ian Gillan was in New York, I believe I was in New York, we still did it via the phone. So, but that was literally such a great interview, and that was always one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right, John. Well, always a pleasure, and I will see you at M3.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
On Sunday.